The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week is Parashas B'Shalach, but tonight is also Tu Bishvat, the 15th of Shvat, which is the anniversary of the trees, Rosh Hashanah Li'ilonesh. So I'd like this evening to spend the time of the shiur speaking about trees. First, let us bring out a few points which are more or less unique in a tree. Firstly, a tree is known for giving peiros, gives forth fruit. Secondly, gives protection, tzeil, protects one from the severe heat, also can give one protection from the wind and from the rain. You know, if you ever drive in the country, you go through farmlands, it's common to see when you'll have acres of unbroken farmland, but then you'll have a line of trees every once in a while. This is here. I've seen this in America, so it's probably all over. And I always wondered why you can have an expanse of open land and then a line of trees. You can understand if there's a farmhouse there, so you want a little settled area with shade. But this is in the middle of nowhere. One day I was driving through the country and there were cattle that were grazing, and a hailstorm broke. It started to rain and hail. And all of the cattle, in unison, calmly got up and all headed for the trees. They went for shelter under the trees. And then I read a story. There was a philanthropist that lived in the last century. His name was Baron Hirsch. Enormous philanthropist. He was from the Austrian-German Jewry. He was reckoned as perhaps the wealthiest man in the world in his time. And during his lifetime, he gave $100 million to charity to Stockholm. He was very concerned with the Jewish plight in Russia. And he bought up land, agricultural land, in America and in South America. And I know in America, they were known as the Baron Hirsch colonies. And in South America, in Argentina, he wanted to get the Jews out of the cities of Russia, where they were living in dire circumstances, and make farmers out of them. And he felt that there in the plains of Argentina is known for its grasslands, would be a wonderful place. So he financed many Jews, and many of the Jews in South America today, those that are there for many, many years, came through the Baron Hirsch funds. So this was a book about him. So it writes that the first agricultural undertaking was a failure. The Jews weren't experienced in this type of agriculture. And one of the reasons why it was a failure, it writes, is because they didn't plant trees for the cattle. So the cattle eventually died of sunstroke. So you see these lines of trees there are imperative. Cattle go there and they cool off from the sun, and if they say otherwise, it's an unbroken day of enormous sun, and they weren't used to that heat coming from Russia. They weren't used to the heat of and the conditions of Argentina. And also it gives protection from rain. So this is a second point we see in a tree. that of Tzeil and Hagona. A third point, trees are very necessary to strengthen the land. Where there are trees, then it protects against soil erosion. Where there are no trees, the soil gets washed away through the rain and through the harsh weather conditions. So they strengthen the land. A fourth use of trees is its wood. Can't imagine what is built from wood. South Africa is blessed with many, many natural resources, but not with too many trees. That's why you do not find too much being built here in wood. Go to other countries, for example America, Europe also, but America has enormous forests, and the majority of the homes are built out of wood, because wood is a much more plentiful and cheaper material than bricks or steel there. But furniture, homes, whatnot, is built from the wood of trees. Some other points, unique points that we find in the character of trees, is first of all, a tree takes a very, very long time to reach its maturation. Probably longest of all plants, of all plant life. It's not full grown until many, many years. You have to be very patient with a tree. The fact is, many people don't like to plant trees because they say it can take 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years before I'll have any benefit from it. Secondly, on the other hand though, a tree lasts for years. It is written in your books, scientific books, that of all plant life, the tree lasts the longest. Some trees last 20, 30 years, but you have trees that outlive men, and they can last 50 or 100 years. You have the famous what are they called, the redwood trees in California, which are gigantic trees, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that it's recorded that they last hundreds of years, if not thousands. There's no plant life that will live that long. Another unique point in the tree, it grows both from the top and the top and the bottom. Its growth is from the branches and from the roots. And one shouldn't think that its major growth is from the branches. Not so. Just as the branches grow, the roots grow. The branches we see, the roots we do not see. Another unique point of the tree. Generally, when we look at the tree and we look how big the tree is, we measure the trunk and we measure the branches. This is not necessarily so. I'm not an expert on this when it comes to trees. But I've been told that it's common to find that the roots are far greater than the tree. And the roots can grow longer and stronger and spread out in many more directions than the branches can. And it's concealed from the eye. So these are some of the unique points that we see in the tree. So we mentioned some of the benefits that we have from the tree and its unique points. We have a posuk at the end of Parshas Shoftim, Perchov posuk yutes, ki odom eitz asoda. Man is like the tree of the field. Now, the simple meaning of that posuk in context to what were speaking about there. They were speaking with the Dean of Leisashkis, that one should not wantonly destroy a tree. You're making a siege around the city. It does not mean that man is like a tree. That's a different meaning altogether. And Rashi brings this out. However, still the Torah writes, man is like a tree. And the Maral brings in a place that the Torah is also telling us, besides the meaning of the context of that chapter over there, that there are a great many similarities between man and between tree, as it states, Ki Odom Eitz Hashode. Man is like a tree of the field. Let's try to explain what is meant by that. In Tehillim, in Tehillim Kapitel Tzarek Beis, we have a perek of Tehillim that we're all very familiar with. Mizmor Shir Leyem HaShabbos. Dovra Melech sang a song for Shabbos. We're all familiar with this because we say this a number of times on Shabbos, every Shabbos. Now, in this kapitel, David HaMelech is comparing the Rishoyim, the evil people, to grass. Bifreyach Rishayim Kime Esav. The Rishayim will flourish like grass. Yotzitzu Kol Polei Obed. All of those who do evil will burst forth just as grass does. And he compares the Tzadikim, the righteous, to trees. Tzadik Katoma Yifroch. Tzaddik, the righteous, will give blossom to its fruit, like the date tree, the date palm, ki eres balvon yiske, and he will grow high and mighty, like the cedars of Lebanon. And on this, Dovid HaMelech praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, Tev lehodes Lashem. Good to praise Hashem, and to sing to His exalted name. Ki semachtani Hashem before lecho, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made me rejoice because of Your handiwork. B'maase yodecha ranein, ma godlu maasecho Hashem. How great is Your handiwork? Me'ed omku makshevisecho. How deep are Your thoughts? Ish ba'ar le'yidom. The barren will not understand this. Uksil le'yovin esois. And the fool will not understand this. Lahagim ki yoshor Hashem. Tzuri ve'le'avlos aboy. And this is all to explain how upright Hashem is, and where there is nothing crooked in His works. Now all of this needs explanation. As I'll say, this kapitel he wrote for Shabbos, as it states, Mizmor Shir Leyem HaShabbos. Yet there's nothing mentioned here about Shabbos. He starts to talk about the wicked, and he says they grow like grass. And then he talks about the tzaddikim, and he compares them to a date tree and to a cedar tree. And then he starts to praise Hashem on how perfect Your work is, and how much joy he has from this. What does this all mean? The Baal explains. The Baal in Sefer Netzach Yisrael, Perek Yutes. Shabbos is the perfection, the completion of the Maaseh Bereishis, of the 6 days of creation. Without a Shabbos, then the 6 days of creation would be very much chosar, would be, the creation would be very incomplete. In this way, Shabbos is similar to Olam Haba, to the world to come, because the Olam Hazeh, this world, would be very incomplete without the next world. The Olam Haba is the perfection and completion of this world. As we say, Olam Hazeh is a praise, the Olam Haba, it's an entry chamber to the palace. In this way, David HaMelech is comparing Shabbos to the world to come. And because of this, that we have this world and the next world, he praises HaKadosh Baruch Hu that his acts are perfect. They are not incomplete, but perfect, and the great wisdom of Hashem. And this is why, incidentally, why this mizmor is for Shabbos. Because what the world to come is for the world, from this world, is Shabbos to the 6 days of Melucha. Now, if a person takes a look at the 6 days of work alone, maybe the world is not too bad. But it's not too good either. A lot of problems. Shabbos comes and uplifts it and gives a whole different picture. This is the same thing. When we look at this world, we cannot look at it in an isolated fashion. We must look, because if we do, we will be very disappointed. But what we must do is look at it together with the world to come. If we would look at this world in an isolated fashion, what would we see? We would see the Rishoyim, the evil, having great success and easy success. And we would see the righteous having very difficult times and gaining and achieving success only through great hardship and through many, many years of toil. And if at all they even reach that, in this way the Rishoyim are compared to the grass. You want to plant some grass, how long does it take? 1, 2, 3. Not only that, but in the most difficult conditions, grass can grow. On the other hand, you want to plant a tree, this takes a lot of work and a lot of patience, a lot of time. Now, with this, David was very concerned. He was very worried about it. It's a world of injustice. It's a wrong world. If you steal, if you lie, if you cheat, if you murder, you gain. If you're honest, if you're upright, you lose. Is the world. And incidentally, David HaMelech was a man who was speaking with experience. He wasn't speaking theoretically, because first of all, he was always rejected as a young child, and as he grew up, he was always in the background, pushed away. And eventually, when he became king, his life was full. Even before he became king, he became a man who constantly had to seek refuge, a fugitive of injustices by Saul, by King Saul, and so forth and so on. And even when he became king, his life was full of political enemies that wanted to destroy him. Fact is, the Medrash says that of all of the Yisurim and of all of the hardships and afflictions that came to the world, a third, not all David, was David's lot. So he wasn't speaking theoretically, he was speaking from experience. And he saw a world which was totally wrong. A world of injustice. A world of cruelty. But then he said, no. He said, Ma godlu ma'asecho, me'ir omku makshavesecho. There's great wisdom in this. There's great depth in this. Ishbar le'ido uksili yominezes. The empty person will not understand this. The fool will not understand this. It'll take a wise man to understand this. He says, why is it that grass is so successful? Grows quickly under any conditions. He says, I'll tell you why. Because its point of full growth, its point of perfection is very, very small. How, to what greatness is grass going to grow? The grass is like a weed. What is it going to achieve? What will you have from it? What is its lifespan? The fact is, grass is from the lowest of the level of the plants. And because its point of maturation, its point of fullness is so small, therefore this growth is very quick. On the other hand, grass can be destroyed overnight. Grass can grow, it can die. Take a tree. Why does a tree take so long to grow? Because its goal is so high, its objective is so high. The span that it reaches for is so great. Therefore, it takes years to reach it. And to the contrary, once it reaches that, it's not so easy to destroy. You know, we see weather conditions. When farmers complain, there's drought. What's the problem? There's no grazing lands for the cattle. What happened to the trees? The trees don't die in a drought. The grass does. The trees carry on. They dig their roots deep, deep into the ground. It will take more than a season of drought to kill trees. When there's flood, wash away the grass. Heavy rains, erode. Trees carry on. And David HaMelech saw that the Rishoyim, the evil, they reach success immediately, because that success is a very low grade success. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu even gives them this success, so he can destroy them immediately from this world. On the other hand, the tzaddikim, he wants them to grow great and mighty. This takes time. You can take a skill and learn it quickly. But greatness, you want to become a master of the music, a master of painting, a master engineer, that's going to take sometimes a lifetime. Tzaddikim that become great and masters in life, this can take many, many, many years. And therefore we will not see their success quickly. Fact is, sometimes we might not even see it in this world. In the next world, for sure, everything is sorted out. The Rishoyim are like the grass that became washed away in flood or in drought. The Tzaddikim become trees, great trees that last endlessly. And in this, he said, is the great wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And because of this, he praises Hashem and says, Simachtani, Ma Godlu Ma'asecho, how righteous and just are the ways of Hashem. Now it makes sense what he's talking about. Bismoshiliyim HaShabbos. And this Shabbos shows us the world to come, shows us. Tev lahedis lashem lezame leshim chalalyein lahagin babeke chazdecha vemonosko valeles. The boker and the leles refer, the Gemara says, to this world and the next world. That it's so good to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kisamachtani Hashem before lechem masyu decharanim. Because I have rejoiced in your works. Your works are so perfect. Your works are so great, but so deep. The Baron will not understand this. You let the Rishoyim, the evil, flourish like grass. So you can destroy them quickly. Let them come to their end. Let them grow to their capacity, and then they will be destroyed. And you destroy all of your enemies from in front of you, because you do not want them around too long. You don't want them in the next world. But the tzaddik, katoma yifra ki eres balvon en yiska, the tzaddik will be like the date tree and grow great like the cedar. Shesuli beveis Hashem bechatzrei selakeinu yafrichu odyunum beseva deshem maranim yiyu. Even after many, many years, when he should be old, when a tree is old, it's still ripe, it's still strong, it's still young. And this is all lahagid ki yoshor Hashem tzuri v'le'arlos aboy. This all testifies to the perfection of the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what the looking at the world to come does when we look at it together. The world, this world and the next world. And in a way, this is also true with Shabbos. During the week, we do not see so much the distinction between Yisrael and the Amim. Israel and the nations of the world. Comes a Shabbos, because during the week Israel is overloaded with their work. Come Shabbos, Israel become kings. They dress up, they beat their covet, they wear clothes of honor, royal garments. They're free like malochim, like kings that have no work to do, like princes and princesses. They're happy. And you look at the nations of the world, they carry on with their work like slaves. Shabbos shows the distinction between Yisrael and Amim. an osi. It's a sign that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken Klal Yisrael. He was mabdil, he separated Klal Yisrael, he was mekadosh them from the rest of the world. And Shabbos is me'ein olam haba. It's a window into the world to come. There will be very evident the difference between the righteous and the evil. Even though we don't always see this during the week, or we don't always see this in this world. And David HaMelech wrote that himself, Evan Moasu Habonim Ha'isal Reish Pino. The stone which was despised all of the time. He was rejected. He was afflicted and he was embarrassed. Eventually it became Reish Pino. Eventually it became the kingdom. The Gemara in Bava Basra and the Pei Omed Beis brings this, what we mentioned, and asks the question. It says, Dorish Rebchia Bar Lulia Laino. Maiduk Siv Sadikato Me Yifro Keres Balvonem Yiske. The righteous is compared to the date tree and to the cedar tree. Im nema toma loma nema eres, im nema eres loma nema toma. If he's a date tree, so why is he a cedar tree? If he's like a cedar, why is he like a date? What does David want to bring out with this? Ilu nema eres, vele nema toma, hoisi eimer ma eres eneisem peres, av tzadik eneisem peres. Bekach nema tomer, im nema tomer, velein nema eres, hayisi eimer ma tomer en gizei machli, veins av tzadik en gizei machli, bekach nema eres. The date tree and the cedar tree are two of the greatest trees that we have. But each one is known for a different quality. The unique quality of the date tree is in the abundance of its delicious fruit. It's known for the quality of its fruit and for the abundance of its fruit. This is what the commentaries bring. And what kind of fruit does it give forth? Besides being nutritious, it gives forth the most sweetest fruit. States that when the Torah is praised because it's an Erev Zovas Cholav Udvash, it's a land of milk and honey, or it's referring to the Dvash, the honey of the date. In many cases, where the Torah writes of the main fruits which Eretz Yisrael is praised because of. And these are the fruits that we have to bring Bikurim, the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. The date is one of them. It calls it Dvash, honey. What was it created for? Why did it have to be so sweet? It has nutrition. No nutrition you don't have to have with such sweetness. The Chazal say, L'tainug, to give enjoyment to people. Kodesh Baruch Hu states he created food to sustain man. But then he wanted also that they should enjoy themselves here. You could serve a person a meal of bread. You could serve him a few other things. It'll be a very healthy, nutritious meal. You could serve him vegetables. But Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted him to enjoy himself also. And the Gemara always brings where dates were used either sometimes before the meal, or many times after the meal, as a tainuk, a delicacy. So here we have a tree that gives forth wonderful fruit that is not only good for the person, but also full of sweetness, It's honey. Actually, this was the common, what we use sugar today for. In those lands, they use this honey, which gives forth wonderful fruit and sweet fruit in enormous abundance. This is what the tomor, the date tree, was known for. The cedar tree, on the other hand, didn't give any fruit. What was it known for? It was known for its good wood. There was no wood like the cedar wood. The fact is, the atzei shittim, which the Torah writes about, that we should make the Kli HaMishkan, the objects that we needed in the sanctuary, the Gemara brings Eser Arozim Hain. There are 10 species of the cedar. That's one of the species of the cedar. The cedar was known for its strength. It produced wood. It produced the best wood, the strongest wood, an abundance of wood. The cedar was known for its height. That's why by the date tree it states Sadi Katoma Yifroch. Its fruits will blossom. While by the cedar tree it says Ke Eres Balvonen Yisker. Yisker speaks of its enormous height and strength. The Gemara in Masech to Gittin, where the Gemara brings in Perek HaNizokin, where they're speaking of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so the Gemara tells us what caused the destruction of Yerushalayim. Then it tells us what caused this destruction of Beitar. There was a city of Beitar. Beitar was a city that was known for its strength. It was a fortress. And eventually it fell to the Romans. And the Gemara says, what caused the destruction of Beitar? Gemara brings Asako de Ritzok Chore Beitar. What initiated it? What brought its downfall was an incident that happened. An Asako de Ritzok. What was that? That was a lady's chariot. Special chariot made for ladies, that its side fell apart. What happened? The Gemara relates. It was the minig of the Bnei Beitar. It was the custom of those people that lived in Beitar. When a son would be born, Shasli Arzo, they would plant an eris, a cedar tree. Now, the Maral brings, why would they plant a cedar tree? They prized themselves on their strength. A son represented strength. So in honor of the son, they would take the strongest tree. This was the cedar. The Lukta Shasli Turniso. A daughter was born, they would plant another type of tree. It's called the Turniso. Rashi doesn't tell us what it is, he just brings a French word for it. A fin tree. And when the two children would grow, when the son would grow up and he would marry a daughter of someone else, so the parents would cut down the cedar tree and they would cut down this other tree. And together they would make a chupa and a home for the chosen and kala. This was their minhag. Yumachad have a kochalfa barte de Caesar. One day, the daughter of the Caesar. See, at that time, the Romans were occupying the land, the Roman legions. But they had normal, they had, I wouldn't say normal, but they had relations with Klal Yisrael. There was a balance of power there where they left Israel alone. One day, the daughter of the Caesar was driving in her carriage, Itbar Sako de Rispak, and her carriage broke. So her servants went out and they had to fix the side of the carriage. They needed some wood. So they went and they saw a cedar tree, so Kotsa Arzo. So they cut down the cedar tree. The Beitarniks weren't so happy with that, because this was one of the trees that one man had planted for his son. So what happened? Kotsa Arzo Aile Luhu Osinofalayo. Machnu. So he went and he got a bunch of his friends and they went and they beat up the princess's guard. Also, so when they made their way back to the palace, the guard, Omru Leila Kesa, they went to the Caesar, Mordoboch Yehudoi. They said, the Jews are rebelling against us. We had an agreement with them of peaceful coexistence, and now look what they've done to us. So also a lion. So the Caesar sent his legions against Beitar, and that triggered off the war. That's the story of a cedar tree. But the point we're bringing out is the Maral brings, they Beitar prided them on themselves on their strength. And this is therefore they would plant a cedar tree in honor of the birth of a son. Now, so the Gemara says, these are the two qualities. Now the Gemara says further in the quality of the cedar. It says gizei machlif. When you cut down the date tree, then it dies. When you cut down the cedar tree, it doesn't die. It'll grow back. Its roots are still alive and it grows back. Now this is a further manifestation of its strength, its longevity. You can't kill it, it's so strong. You cut it down, grow back. So the Gemara says, what is David comparing it? Why is he comparing it to a date tree, and why is he comparing it to a cedar tree? So the Gemara says, what David means is because a tzaddik, the righteous, they give forth an abundance of fruit in this world. And good fruit. And not only good fruit, but delicious sweet fruit. If you look, for example, in the Mishnah, Masechta Avos, Rebbei Ha'Emor Kol Ha'Emet, Kol Ha'Emet Heira Lishmo Zecher L'Dvorim Harbe, Belei Od, that when someone studies Torah and gives himself to Torah, he writes there what the world and the people have from him. So he gives forth fruit, good fruit and sweet fruit. If we compare him to the date tree, I would say he gives forth fruit, but when he dies, he dies. Therefore he compares him to the cedar tree to show that he has enormous strength. And not only does he give forth fruit like the date tree, but he'll never die. Even when he's knocked down, he will come back to life. How does he come back to life? The Rashbam says, like it states in Mishlei Chof Dalet, we once gave a shir on this, Shlei Mamela King Solomon said, Ki sheva yipol tzadik v'kom. The tzaddik will fall 7 times, but he will always get up. You cannot knock him down. You cannot keep him down. Or, better yet, even after he dies, his influence still remains in the world, and he will get up again in the next world. This is how the Maral says in a place. So what do we see? We see that man has the quality to be like a tree. He can be like the tomar, the tree which gives forth the greatest and the most abundant and the sweetest of fruits. But eventually it will come to an end. But man has the power where he'll be like the cedar tree also, of unending strength where he'll never come to an end. Gizeh machlif, just like the cedar tree, you cut it down, the roots will grow again, so will the tzaddik, so will man, the righteous man. We mentioned that a tree also gives forth protection, shade, and strengthens the earth. We find in Parsha Shalach, in Perek Yud Gimel Posechof, Moshe sent the Meraglim. He sent the spies to scout out the land of Israel. He told them what to look for. See if the cities are fortified. See what kind are the people. Look at its fruit. Look at its mountains. Then he said, Hayesh Ba Eitz. See if there's a tree there. Hayesh Ba Eitz. What's he asking them? See if it's a tree there. First of all, why shouldn't there be a tree there? Secondly, and if there is a tree, Hayesh Ba Eitz. Is there a tree? So Rashi says, Im Yesh Bam Odom Kosher Shi Yogi Na Lehe Bishusai. See if there's a tzaddik there. If there's no tree, if there's no righteous person there, then we have nothing to worry about. But if there's a righteous person there, then we have what to worry about, because he will protect them. He compared that to a tree. Just like you have a tree, and a tree strengthens the earth and its surroundings and protects that what's close to it with its shade and protection, so does the tzaddik. So therefore he commanded them, Hayesh Ba Eitz, spy out the land to see if there's a tree. When they came back in Perek Yud Aleph Posuk Tes, so Kolev and Yeshua said, Ach Bashem Al Timreidu. And they started to complain, everyone, and said that we'll never conquer the land because they're evil people and they're cruel and they will eat us alive and they're giants there and whatnot. So they said, Abashem Al Timreidu, don't rebel against Hashem. Lachmeinu Heim, they will be our bread. Sword Silo Me Aleihem, their shadow, their protection has left them. What does that mean? Rashi brings from the Gemara, Meginom Vechoskom. He who protected them has left them. Ksherim Shebehem Mesu. Their righteous people have died. Eov, Shohoya Megin Alehem. Eov lived amongst them. And Eov was a righteous person, and he could have protected them from us. But he died. He's not there anymore. Sort Silom, the shadow of this great tree, has disappeared. We have nothing to worry about. So is it with the person. A person, a righteous person, gives protection to the people and to the world. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Tshuva, what does it mean, Tzadik Yisod Olam? The righteous become a foundation for the world. He says the righteous save the world. Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges the world, he judges the world, Lefi Reiv Aben Esav, V'Reiv Shkuy Esav. He counts up all of the Avedas in the world and all of the mitzvahs in the world. And he weighs them up and he judges accordingly. It's the tzaddikim that are machriya sakaf. It's the righteous people that make the scale of the ma'asim tovim, of the good deeds, of doing what's right, greater than the rishoyim with their deeds. And therefore he saves the world. Nimtso, he says, tzaddik yisod olam. It's the righteous that are saving the world. In this way, man is like a tree. We brought that the roots of the tree and the branches, they grow two directions. Branches go one way, the roots grow another way. Maral brings in a place. He says, in this way, it's similar to man. Man is also this way. Because besides the fact that man grows physically and he grows spiritually, he says, not only does the tree grow in two directions, but the tree is attached in two directions. Generally we see, if someone will ask you, where is the tree attached to? You'll say, well, it's attached to the ground. Right? Not true. The tree is attached to the ground and it's attached to the heavens. If you block its light, it'll die. Just as the tree needs soil, it must have light. You take a tree in a cave, it'll die. Sometimes you'll find trees in caves that have wound their way long distances to get some sunlight, because they have to attach themselves to the sunlight in order to live. They get their nutrition from the light. You cannot grow a tree or a plant in darkness. So he has two attachments. He says man also has two attachments. Man is attached to the ground and he's attached to the heavens. His mozzah and his sustenance comes from the ground and it comes from the heavens. Just as the tree, you sever him at either point, he'll die. The same thing with man. We mention further that when we look at a tree, we look at its branches, its mighty branches. We do not realize that as mighty as its branches are, its roots are even mightier. And that's benella. That's concealed. So is it with man. You look at man, you see him physically. You see him physically, you see his physical possessions. But we do not realize that as great as he might be physically, or with his physical possessions, he has spiritual growth also, and spiritual possessions also. And that's concealed from the eye. And that is mighty, if not mightier, than the growth which we see. And the fact is, that has to be mightier. We have in Tehillim, right at the first perek. First perek tells us, it states, Ashri ish asher lo halach batzis rishoy b'derech hatoyim le'omad meishim leitzim le'yoshov. How fortunate is the man that has not walked in the ways of the wicked, and that has not gone in the ways of the chatoim, has not stood in the ways of the chatoim, has not sat in the ways of the leitzim. Ki b'seiris Hashem cheftzei b'seirisei yege yeme v'leilo. His desire is only in teiris Hashem. And in his Torah he has labored day and night. V'hoya ke'et shosul al palge moim, asher pir ye'itein be'itay. He is like a tree whose branch, whose roots spread out on all sides of the river. Asher pir ye'itein be'itay. Now the Gemara on this pasuk states, what is so good about this tree? Because his roots spread out in all directions, on many waters. And if one water will dry up, he has other waters. And therefore, pir yeite beite v'alei la'ibal, he will give forth its fruit in time, and he will not wither. V'chol asher yasi yatzliach, and whatever he do will succeed, not like the rishoyim, that the wind. The Gemara brings that when you have a tree that has strong branch, strong roots, then the winds will not knock it over. And this is the Mishnah Novus. The Mishnah Novus tells us
at the end of Perek Gimel. It's Reb Lezer ben Azayo said, "Hu Yaimer, Kol Shechok Mose Meruba Mimaisov." He says, "Just a man must have a balance." He says, "This we can learn from a tree. A tree must have a balance. It cannot be top heavy. On the other hand, it can't have only roots and give forth no fruits or no branches. So you have to strike a balance. And just as the tree must have a balance between its branches and its fruit and its roots, man must have a balance between his wisdom and his deeds." He says that his wisdom, he cannot go crawl and climb into wisdom which is too beyond him. But there has to be this growth process. It's like when you learn Mikra first, Chumash. Then you go to Mishnah. Then you go to Gemara, Rashi, and Tosfos. Then you go to the Rishonim. He says if he's going to crawl and climb into wisdom which is too beyond him, and he doesn't grow proportionately, then he will be like a tree whose branches are too heavy and he has very little roots. On the other hand, if he will grow proportionately and he'll have deeds which will grow together with his wisdom and will even be more than his wisdom, then he'll be like a tree which has many roots and he'll be impossible to move. Kol shechok mosem merubah b'maisov. If his wisdom is too far ahead of his deeds, what is he like? He's like a tree that the branches are enormous and very, very small amount of roots. A wind will come and uproot it. On the other hand, someone whose deeds are more than his wisdom, what is he like? He's like a tree which has not so many branches, but many roots. Shafilu kol aruchi sheba'elem bo'os. All the winds in the world will not be able to move this tree or to uproot it. And then the Mishnah brings from that pasuk ba'yake eitz shosul al palgi al moim. So here we mentioned. That we see from trees various usages. They give forth fruit. They give protection to people or animals who come into their protection, or to the earth and the soil. And they give forth their wood. And then we see various unique points in a tree. It takes a long time for them to reach maturity. More than any other plant. You have to be very patient. On the other hand, they will live far longer than any other plants. They grow both from the bottom and from the top. They have many, many roots. Many roots. Both in quantity and quality, which are concealed from the eye. And then we brought a pasuk, that the Torah compares man to the tree of the field. So there's a great many things that we can learn from a tree. One final note. When the Torah tells us the negative commandment of leisashkis, we are not allowed to destroy. We are not allowed to destroy the world or anything in the world with wanton destruction. we can utilize. The Torah gave us the world to use, but not to destroy. It used the illustration of a tree. And a simple reason could be, because you destroy a tree, you could see the enormous destruction. It has taken nature, it has taken the earth, years and years and years to produce a tree. You destroy some grass, like we said, all right. But a tree, what went into making that tree? Years and years and years went into producing that tree, and here and there you destroy it and utilize it. For example, if you want to use its wood, you can destroy it. But then the Torah says you should take the wood of a tree that doesn't give fruit, not a fruit tree. If a fruit tree, on the other hand, starts to do damage, all right, then you're allowed to move it or destroy it if you have to. The world was given to us to use, but not to destroy. This we've given Shuriman in the past. I just want to make mention here that I noticed two things. That I noticed in some notes that I had on this subject. This was in 1989. This was printed in an international magazine. At that time, see, we live in a world that only destroys. That's all they do. Don't let anybody tell you differently. And we have the greenkeepers that will talk about the coastline, the game reserve. But this is a drop in the bucket, a drop in the ocean. The destruction of Western civilization, I mean, it started before then. But the Gemara tells us that the Western civilization, which are the heirs of the Roman era, it writes the Romans in particular, were destructive. They destroyed. They destroyed for their greed, their sport, whatever it might be. The destruction that takes place on a daily basis is something which we cannot even fathom. Newspapers don't even write about it. They write about a little here, an oil spill here. One example, in 1989, they were cutting down the forests of the tropics because for purposes of greed, they'll have a little more farmland. So this was reported in an international magazine, and those tropical forests were rich, rich in everything. And they were needed for the balance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's whole world. They were cutting down one football field per second. This is the rate of the destruction that was going on. One football field per second, 24 hours a day. Another example. See, the Western world doesn't like to talk about destruction because they live on war. The greatest destroyer is not the little oil spill that you'll have there, or what happens to the penguins. And this is for nursery school kids. The greatest destruction is war. And Rome thrived on war. It was cataloged that in our century there's been over 100 wars. And this they don't like to talk about. In 1989, after the war in Mozambique is one little corner of the world, 40,000 babies per day were dying from starvation. 40,000 babies a day. So we're not talking about the penguins. Many times I've asked, what did the world wars cost? You have all of our people, the Gemara speaks about speaking Lashon Hara and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have all our well-meaning committees that talk about the world is not capable of supporting life. It's not capable of giving enough food to the people. It's not capable of supporting so much life. We have to depopulate the world and so forth and so on. There's poverty in the world. Do you know how much money we have thrown into the sea that we have thrown away? What do you do in a war? You dig up iron ore, precious minerals. You make battleships with them. And then you sink them at the bottom of the sea and let them rot. Besides all of the resources, human resources and mineral resources that went into that, you pollute the seas and kill a lot of fish at the same time. Or every shell that's fired. I've asked many times, what did the wars cost us? How much? I once saw an article where they said that they cannot calculate it. Can't calculate it. But just last week, Stephen Kravitz gave me an article from The Economist where they are working on calculating it. Now, they're speaking of two things here. The world wars and our nuclear program. It says the nuclear program of the United States alone, the nuclear weapons program, have cost the American taxpayers a minimum. Now this is in current dollars. A minimum of $4 trillion. $4 trillion. What's $1 trillion? $1 million is 5 million rand. That's to start with. $1,000 million is $1 billion. $1,000 billion. If you take $1 million and put it in a boxes of thousands, and you take 1,000 of those boxes, say, you have $1 billion. Or you have $1 trillion. Now this is $4 trillion, which would be approximately 20 trillion rand. 20 trillion rand taxpayers had to pull out of their pockets to pay for nuclear development of weapons. The article writes the cleanup of it is going to cost billions. The dismantling of it. Besides the damage it's done, but now they're dismantling it, he says that costs billions. Because these, it writes here, can have literally hundreds and hundreds of pouts. Hundreds of pouts. Where each one has to be dismantled very, very carefully. Each warhead. And it takes a whole team, and it can take a year to dismantle one. The article goes through, and then what to do with it. See, so the cleanup is going to cost billions of dollars. So from America alone, that's not the rest of the world, we've paid 20 trillion rand. What could you do with 20 trillion rand? There's poverty in the world. There's no poverty in the world. We're taking our money and throwing it to the bottom of the sea. 20 trillion rand, you could build homes for the whole world. You could build farms for the whole world. You could produce food for the whole world. You could build factories that would produce good things for the whole world. That's from one country alone, but we choose to take it and throw it into the sea. Now, the article says, that's kid stuff, this $4 trillion. He says, that's nothing compared to the cost of the world wars. He says, they write here that the centuries, two world wars, in today's money, cost 22 trillion rand. 22 trillion dollars. So that's 100 trillion rand. So the two world wars cost 100 trillion rand. There's poverty in the world. The chidush is, the miracle is why there's still money in the world. That's the miracle. The miracle is why there's still money and there's still food and there's still a tree left in the world. Can you imagine how many trees are destroyed in a matter of war? What they did to Vietnam or Korea or wherever you want. See? This is the Leish Ashkri. See? So, the world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created had unlimited wealth. Unlimited wealth. The miracle is, the greatest proof it had such a limited wealth is what's still here. Is what's still here. So don't let anybody talk to you about, you know, we got to save the penguins. There's other places we could start with. These are a few thoughts in regards to this evening, which is Tu Bishvat, the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilonis.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedolah of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.